I'd like to propose a toast.
Hello and welcome to Before Brunch. I'm Megan Cassidy.
And I'm Cassie Delaney.
And we are your weekly celebrity news, arts, pop culture podcast. We go live every Sunday morning at about 6 a.m.
Every single Sunday. We're 3 for 3 now.
3 for 3.
Unheard of. People are excited. They're planning their weekends around Before Brunch again. Order has been restored.
Yes, you've gone off script.
I have, yeah. We talk about all the things you're going to be talking to your friends about at brunch. So that means we take the news stories, things that have happened in the week. We dissect them. We make sense of them. And we ask what they mean for our lives and therefore yours.
It's elevated gossip.
There you go.
This week... Oh, we're also on video, on Spotify for video.
Yeah.
So if you're listening elsewhere and you want to see Cassie's fabulous...
Green on green.
Green velvet blazer.
On green velvet, yeah.
Head over to Spotify where you can watch the entire podcast.
Mm-hmm. Or TikTok-y.
Or TikTok, where you'll see...
Hashtag before
a snippet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Harry Styles. So today we're talking Harry Styles... How TikTok, speaking of which, has changed the music industry. Mm-hmm. Then we're segueing into the bands of our youth and
the
that
appetite
nostalgia.
For nostalgia.
Appetite for nostalgia. Segueing into, well, the segue there will be Blink-182. Am I giving up? I'm putting all the cards on the table.
You can't say your segue before you segue.
Okay.
No, so we're going to naturally segue. Mm-hmm. We're going to naturally move into Kravis. I have prepared a game for you that we'll do at the end. I think you're going to get really excited.
Is it like a pop culture quiz?
It's like a, yeah, it's our appetite for nostalgia quiz.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's like people will think that that's pre-planned because I've gone through the sequence of our segues, but that's not planned. So I'm looking forward to that. Okay. Harry's House. Harry Styles' third studio album released on May 20th. And it's fair to say TikTok has turned into Harry's house.
It has, hasn't it?
Hasn't it?
When Harry is always a pop culture phenomenon, like people, men, women, children, adults, everyone adores him.
Mm.
Everyone loves him. He kind of traverses all genders or all sexualities. Everyone just, I know he's kind of got a lot of criticism for sort of queer baiting because he's not, he doesn't speak about his sexuality in any sort of definitive terms, which I think is great. But yeah, everyone adores him. And this album is nonstop bangers.
Have you listened? You've obviously listened to it.
I've listened to it, not in like, not repeatedly.
Mm.
I'm kind of spacing it out. When the first single from this album came out, I was like, I need to not over listen to it.
Mm.
Because I often do that with Harry Styles and then I start to hate it.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with over listening. Like I still have a playlist that I have been listening to since... Like, I think it's actually titled March 2018.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't, they never lose their magic for me. But I have listened to this album 3 consecutive times in sequence.
Very good.
Yeah. And I absolutely adore it.
Yeah.
I love music for a sushi restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
I love the ba, 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 anything with a ba.
Yeah.
I love, like, he's, there's so much imitation throughout and it, like you were saying, he just traverses decade.
He's just like this ethereal being that exists for everyone,
and he's like in this permanent state of flirtation. He's just so naturally flirtatious. Obviously we haven't seen any footage or anything from this album, but his current aesthetic is incredibly extravagant.
Mm-hmm.
Probably outrageous. Like there was an article written for NPR back in 2017 by a journalist called Anne Power, and she opened it with "The clothes make the boy," and that has really defined Harry Styles, like what he has worn and how his career journey can be mapped onto his fashion choices. And right now he's in his most outrageous. And the album for me is not like, maybe it's because my ear is untrained, but there's nothing new there. In fact, it's really like a patchwork of different genres.
It's just good. It's good. It's good music. It's easy to digest. Nice music. He's never too controversial. He evolves, but he doesn't move too far from what he's known for.
Mm.
His evolution from One Direction into Harry Styles is incredible. Absolutely amazing what he's done there. But he's has a very distinct, that's a Harry Styles bop.
Yeah.
You know, and he keeps it safe and he does catchy little bops. And then he takes advantage of trending, you know, trending systems and trending technologies to help him grow. It is, he lives on TikTok perpetually. You can't open TikTok without hearing As It Was.
It's everywhere. I think As It Was has been used 2 million times in videos at this point.
I think the only song that I see more is Lizzo's About Damn Time. Yeah. Which is great. And Harry is tuned into the way the music industry is at the moment. I was kind of reading a little bit about this today and trying to understand why so many bands are making a resurgence, which we'll get to shortly. But one of the key things that a lot of industry experts are saying is because the music industry has moved on so much in the last 10, 15 years, that it's a completely different industry now for people. So a lot of people who had big record label, you know, had big deals back in the kind of noughties, early noughties, maybe even late 90s, are giving it another go because it's a more level playing field. We're seeing a lot more independent record labels thrive and the distribution has changed completely. So if you understand the distribution, you understand what makes songs popular now, anyone can do it. Those the idea that you need the backing and the millions of a huge label are completely gone. And people like Harry Styles and Lizzo are the only massive celebrities I've seen really cashing, like really, really getting on board with it, really going in, to the point where Harry very wisely also brought Lizzo on stage, you know, two of them wearing their Gucci coats, singing away, singing their bops. They know how this industry works now. And the key to this industry at the moment is TikTok.
And the key to the industry is TikTok and it's teen fans. And what I love about Harry is he's never turned his back or rejected his roots where he started in a boy band with girls crying and that teenage passion that fueled One Direction's success. And to this day, he stands up for those fans regularly. He's made it a part of his brand that, yeah, he's a teen idol and he adores like the passion that teen obsession can drive.
It's always been the way, though. Teenage girls have been the driving force behind the success of everything that we know and love in pop culture.
It's true.
Absolutely everything.
Even the first record, I was listening to a brilliant podcast a few weeks ago about the history of music and how it evolved. The first record was driven by a hunger in that teenage demographic to have something that they could play again and again.
Yeah.
That's what drove the technology, because up until we had records, it was all radio broadcast or live music events. And it was the teenage passion that I want to listen to this again and again and again that actually created the market for the first record.
Yeah.
And interestingly, the first record you could only have, you could have a 4 minute song on one side and a 4 minute song on the other. So our 4 minute song that we've come to know today was just a technical limitation that,
that's so interesting,
that's all you could
it?
Have. But now on TikTok, it's a 15 second.
Yeah. So it's a 15 second clip or a 15 kind of 30 seconds that you have to have in a song to that catchy, like, brain just like the brain crack that you have to replay on repeat over and over again, that perfect segment of about damn time that is in a minute I'm gonna eat it, you know, that is just perfect. The rest of the song doesn't, I was so shocked, doesn't sound like that.
Yeah,
it's just a bridge, it's just something they've put in there. And the same with Harry, like he knows how to create music that works as an album and then also what works in short form and how to get it out there to people and how to make people adore him. And he's doing it so well, because I do adore Harry Styles.
Yeah, I love Harry Styles. Like one of the songs, I think, which is his sad one, Little Freak, I think is the tearjerker. And all the gals are crying on TikTok. Like that's the trend, is crying to Little Freak. I think they cry to Matilda as well.
Yeah, Matilda. I saw the big reaction to Matilda.
Yeah, a lot of tears. But yeah, it's a whole new world. And I've heard a critique like leveled at TikTok that it's going to be the end of the music industry because all of these artists are vying to have the perfect 15 second hook. And then we no longer have, you know, our beautiful long form. Well, if you call 4 minutes a long form song.
Yeah.
And that's going to be to the detriment of music. But then you go, well, how do we define what a song should be? Like now that we know the 4 minutes was that's the cultural standard, because technically you couldn't get it onto the record.
I know.
And how can we say that's...
It's always, there's always technology to blame. Like before there was TikTok, Spotify reduced songs down to kind of 2.5-3 minutes, because the idea of Spotify charting was that you get people to listen to multiple songs. And if you had, you know, a half hour album with 12 songs of 2 minutes or 2.5 minutes, you would get more plays than a half hour album that had 6 songs of 5 minutes or whatever. You would chart higher. I think it's something to do with the formation on it, or getting people to stick on it. And that's always the issue with these players and aggregated sites and marketplaces and social media and whatever, is that stickiness is the metric. Stickiness is the thing that helps you do well. You need to get someone to stay on that video. And if that means creating a video that's 15 seconds, but they stay on it from start to finish, that is how you're going to be successful.
Okay. Like, it brings me back to, remember Lil Nas X? It was before the time of TikTok, and his song, Gonna Take My Horse to the Old Town Road.
Yeah. Old Town Road.
Needed to do it to get there. Was launched. He was nobody. It was launched through Twitter, YouTube, and Reddit, because he understood how to create natively for those platforms.
Yeah.
And he understood, which is something that a lot of the bigger labels and huge music juggernauts didn't understand, is that social media is not billboard space where, you know, you create a video and you seed it out just like you're filling inventory, you're just filling a space. Lil Nas X was so strategic about each platform and how he was going to use it. And on Twitter, he created his own little 15 second video, the guy on the horse, and sent it to a popular memer who then tweeted it and it went viral. But Lil Nas X was the instigator. And it was so clever. Do you think Harry has a TikTok strategy, or...
Yeah, I think he's someone who naturally fits on TikTok. I'd say he enjoys it. It's great crack. I think that a lot of people, he seems to enjoy a lot of the music that TikTokers enjoy. He enjoys a lot of the kind of like old school. His references are always sort of like old school 80s, a lot of Fleetwood Mac, a lot of, you know, even ABBA, that kind of stuff. And you see those on TikTok, you hear those sounds on TikTok, or songs similar to that. So I think that he naturally would find it a place that he belongs and enjoys it. I do think he's wise. I think that his strategy of bringing Lizzo on stage was a great one. I think he's friends with Lizzo. Lizzo, you can see, owns TikTok. She is getting it so right. She dance credited the About Damn Time dance, but she kept doing it. Like, it wasn't just that she did it once and she's like, this is great, it's to my song. She was like, I'm doing this every day on TikTok. I'm going to do this at the Met Gala until Kim Kardashian walks in and sees this. Like, I'm going to keep doing it. And when people were doing it wrong, she released the video where she was like, you're not doing it right. Like, correcting the dance. So she knows how it works. She's really behind it. And I think that Harry is too. Harry just comes off with that kind of calm British, oh, this is all accidental.
He's definitely more aloof about it. Like,
yeah,
he can't be found, correct me if I'm wrong, he can't be found on TikTok. TikTok,
is it?
God help us.
Oh my God. The youth are doing.
On the TikTok. He can't be found on the TikTok starting his own trends. He's just letting it happen because he knows that's where his fan base are. Yeah. And he's maybe aware when they're actually constructing the song that there is a 15-30 second hook that can be lend itself to this platform. But it's probably not a direct play for TikTok. I don't know.
No, I think he's creating content with TikTok and the other platforms in mind.
Yeah.
He's got a very astute understanding of the music industry right now. He has to, because he's doing so well and it's a game that you have to play. Harry Styles is incredibly talented, incredibly good looking and adored, but there are millions of other artists out there who also fit that brief. Harry Styles is on top of his game. He's talking to the right people. He's working with the right people. He knows how to play it.
Like, he's been called the new Frank Sinatra. I think someone referred, like Rolling Stone referred to him as the rock star of our time.
Isn't that gas?
Like, when we talk about, because we've talked about before, you know, a band lineup and how there's always the one. He couldn't have been more the one. And I think it was quite clear from day one, sorry to Niall.
Niall, I adore him, but like, he's not the one.
Yeah.
He's the one in Mullingar.
Oh,
he's an international treasure.
Absolutely.
But like,
He's not the one.
I can picture Niall with his pint of Christmas down in the Ga Club.
Why do I have something about him and a pint of orange juice? Was there a story about him and a pint
of... No, but maybe that's just what comes to your mind. Like, yeah. I can really see him with his tracksuit bottoms and his jumper on and his shoes tied a little too tight, you know? Yeah.
Lovely guy. I was so impressed with him. I think it was towards the... he'll be delighted to hear that towards the start of the pandemic when he appeared on The Late Late Show via Zoom with Ryan Tuberty. So down to earth, so humble, so... I don't know, just very authentic. Whereas I would imagine Harry is probably a very deliberate, strategic person.
Yeah. I'd say Niall was like, ah, yeah, I'll do that, not a bother. Whereas Niall is like, or Harry is not going to turn around and just randomly do The Late Late Show. He wouldn't. Or even I think he's very strategic about what he chooses to be on. He's on a lot of US stuff. He's, you know, he's good pals with James Corden.
Yeah, like I think he just plays a really big part in crafting his brand and makes it look really effortless. But we all know that the most effortless presentations are the ones with the most thought behind them. And you could even see from day one when he was on The X Factor, like the lads would be all lined up in their jeans and trainers or whatever. And he'd have like a white t-shirt, but he'd have a scarf. Yeah. Like tied here, and it was just something a little bit different. Yeah. Or he'd show up to the red carpet and his bow tie would be just a little bit oversized. Yeah. Or
he was clever from the start.
He really was clever.
And I think he's been very deliberate in not identifying his sexuality, even though we've only ever known him to date women.
Mm.
Everyone is still like, oh, our queer icon Harry Styles.
Mm.
And I think that he is wise to do that. I think that he is queer. I do think that he probably is. I think snippets of conversations he's had and his refusal to state it specifically, I think is strategic. But I do think that he was aware of that from the start, considering they've been in the public eye since they were 16, 17, if not younger. And he's never commented on his sexuality. I think from day one, from the scarf and the oversized bow ties, he knew what his end game was. And it was international stardom. He is a global rock star. He's like a little Freddie Mercury.
Yeah. And like his style choices now, like androgyny has always been a part of the music industry and kind of the rock trope.
Yeah.
I always feel embarrassed when I say the word rock. I feel like I'm not allowed to say it or something, or like someone's just going to make fun. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's exactly it. Like you feel like you're at a house party and you say the word rock and someone's like, name a rock band. Yeah. Name one
Imagine
rock band.
Imagine you were at a party and they were like, name a rock stand. You're like, as it was. Harry Styles. Like that's ludicrous. Give me another question. He's not a rock star.
Well, it's rock. Is it?
It's the softest version of rock you've ever heard.
See, this is exactly my fear. Like, I'm just getting skewered for saying
it. No, you're not. You're not.
But anyway, rock and androgyny have always been very tightly linked. Yeah. Like, obviously, Bowie. Bowie. Oh, my God. What? No. My insecure self is...
That'd be fun. Do you want to play the game? No. Right.
Anyway, Harry's style choices, like Fergus.
You heard of Elton John.
Fergus shrinking into his chair. I love the charts. I'm a top 50 gal.
Are you?
Okay.
My favorite song is Old Town Road.
Oh, I'm sweating. I just love the top 50. And look, Harry's in the top 50 at the moment, and I know a lot about it.
That's great. Well done. Let's talk about the bands of our youth and the resurgence, because my
loved Blink 182.
182. Yeah. They were my favorite.
Yeah.
I can't even take credit because I was looking at the music that was out in our youth and what I pretended to like and what I was actually listening to, and I cannot remember a thing about the likes of Blink 182 or My Chemical Romance or any of that kind of stuff. But I know I put it out there at the time that I loved them.
But again, like that comes back to the music that you listen to is part of this your bigger identity. Brand. It's like your personal brand, what you wear. And what you listen to. And that's still the case with like Harry Styles, and he's got a very clear fashion aesthetic. But what if you were like a Blink 182 fan back then, you were doing the fishnets.
Oh my God,
your hat.
Like, I was, and here's a little fact for you, right? Girls Aloud one pop idol. This is going to be a spoiler for your quiz later on. Girls Aloud won Pop Stars The Rivals the same year that Avril Lavigne released Complicated. And you can bet your bottom dollar, I was out there with the long sleeve under the t-shirt wearing the pink tie, but going home and listening to Girls Aloud. Like, I was at, I had Sound of the Underground on repeat, but like, that was a private endeavor. As far as everyone else was out there, I had pink stripes in my hair and I was the biggest Avril Lavigne fan you could find.
Yes, like, you're bringing the most horrific and traumatic memory back to me of being at Irish College in Ring, and someone had written Pantera on the bathroom door. I think this is where my fear of saying the word rock originates. I came out and sat down and said, God, the graffiti's so weird. Like, someone wrote the word Pantera. What does that even mean? And the whole group was like, ah, you don't know who Pantera is. You don't know.
Horrible, horrible,
and
horrible behavior,
like,
from
the
children.
Most diminishing moment.
If it makes you feel any better, the minute you said Pantera there, I was like, that's a shampoo. Like, I just.
You don't know Pantera.
Don't know Pantera.
Oh my God, mortified.
So My Chemical Romance played in Dublin, and I know this because I could hear it. They were playing in Kilmainham, Live in Town, and I could hear it going on. But I was wondering, what the fuck are My Chemical Romance doing touring in this day of our Lord, year of our Lord, 2022? And it seems that a significant number of bands from our youth have resurged, are back at it again. Avril is touring also. And a lot of it is, a lot of it, I think, is down to this offensively named festival called When We Were Young. Have you seen the lineup for this?
No.
It's My Chemical Romance, Paramore, Avril Lavigne, I think Blink-182.
So it's targeted at us.
Us. And you know what was so eye-opening was, I saw the lineup before I saw the name. And I was like, finally a festival where I recognize the acts. And they
really
were
sad.
Hideously younger. But I looked into it, right? I was like, why is our...
I said I'd do my bit of research.
My bit of research. And I was like, why is it that we're obsessed with nostalgia? What is it that is making way for all of these bands who we had put to bed in 2006? Why are they coming back touring the world again? And the thing is, I read this great piece from a psychiatrist called Dr. Christine Baccio, and she said that nostalgia motivates us to remember the past, connect with our authentic self, reflect on who we were and compare it to who we are now to inform who we'll be down the road. And I was like, never in time has there probably been the space or the necessity for us all to kind of sit back, reflect and figure out, because for the last 2 years we've been suspended in this kind of limbo. Nobody's really been able to move forward, and now we're looking for things that comfort us from the past or remind us of a time when maybe the road ahead of us was completely open, to sort of understand us, figure out who we are and figure out how to move forward.
Yeah, that's so true. And like, when you think, it's the word comfort for me that's like inseparable from nostalgia. My theory was that when you think back on a memory or a time in your life, even if it wasn't a particularly happy time, there is this weird, like, bittersweet nostalgia.
Just rose-tinted glasses.
Yeah. Even if you were in pain at the time and you know you were in pain, or it was a really, there was a series of traumatic events, or whatever, you still look back and feel a sense of comfort. And I thought, could it be, and I've seen no research to back this up,
okay,
but could it be that in the present moment right now, anything can happen later today?
Yeah.
Like, we can be in a car crash or,
okay,
you know, but anything can happen at any time. So we're constantly in survival mode and watching out for danger and worst case scenario. But when you look back, there's a sense of security that you know exactly what happened after that. So you were almost protected and cozy in that time because you didn't die in a car crash in the interim.
Well, you certainly didn't think like that. You know, you didn't consider those things. When you're a teenager, you're invincible. And the greatest thing that can happen to you, the most destructive thing that can happen to you, is heartbreak. And now it's completely different. As the older you get, the more you're faced with different decisions, I suppose, and more diverging roads, you know?
Yeah.
You're faced with decisions you kind of have to start making, or decisions you've already made. And when you're young, you're limited in what you can do. You don't really have a lot of money. You might have a part-time job that you have to go to. You have to go through 3 or 4 years of college or whatever else is your path. And you're just, the world is a closed, small space for you. And you just only exist within your friends. And then all of that content as well, I guess, is such a, an important part of your identity.
Yeah.
You know, when I look back at my youth, I see us as like always being at gigs. Mm. Like we're probably at one or two a year at most, you know. But I look back and I always, always remember them. I always remember the shows and the TV shows that we all watched together at the same time, because the way we consume content was totally different. So there was like a collectiveness, or like maybe that's what we're seeking again. But also I think, because I was looking at some of the TV shows and some of the films that are getting remakes this year. So like Criminal Minds is coming back, Daria, Pinocchio, Frasier, Grease, Lord of the Rings, Lightyear, which is a spin-off from Toy Story, Father of the Bride, Chip and Dale, Fairly Odd Parents, Cheaper by the Dozen, Beavis and Butthead, Bel Air, which is already out, How I Met Your Father, which is a spin-off of How I Met Your Mother, and Glee are all getting remakes. And it's like we're going back to things that were hits of our time. And maybe it's just because streamers are in such competition that they need things that they think are going to be surefire hits.
And it's also, did you see the tweet from Blind Boy recently where he said, what is it about being in a hotel and you switch a movie on and no matter how like crap the movie is, you enjoy it because it's all you have and you have to watch it and it's just enjoyable, versus sitting on Netflix with endless opportunity, scrolling. And it sort of devalues the content. Like we've got this huge volume and velocity of new content coming in via these streamers and so much choice and overwhelm, that the feeling that I get when I think about Pinocchio is like, that's all I had on VHS.
I watched Hercules over and over and over and over again.
It was over and over again. And there was no overwhelm, no choice. And you were so invested in the story because it was such a huge moment when it, like, remember when Aladdin was coming out? It was like, that was, the, I think, the first time I went to the cinema. Now I'm scared because I was probably like 13. But that was my first cinema outing. Yeah. Either that or The Lion King. And it was such a huge moment that there was a new release that maybe that's what we're craving, is like the bigness of these movies when they were released versus the endless content that we have access to now.
Yeah, maybe that's it. And I also think a lot of us, so when it comes down to music, I think it's the artist trying to make it in the industry again. Do you know that 3 days ago, as the time of recording, Craig David has released a new song?
Well, I'm a bully for him because I know that he was dealing with a lot of self-consciousness.
Really?
Yes, Keith Lemon reduced him to a shell of himself.
Oh, because of the,
He didn't like Bo Selecta.
No.
He got very sensitive about it. If you were to interview him, I don't know if you've ever interviewed him.
Not Craig, no.
Well, you were told before you sat down with him that you were under no circumstances to mention Bo Selecta or Keith Lemon, or he would stand up and walk out.
So you support his return to the music industry.
I'm glad that he's found himself again, because I think he really retreated after that.
So yeah, TikTok, I guess, and other systems and streamers are pushing our nostalgic content back in front of our faces. Wait for this for a segue. But another big driving force of nostalgia has been Travis Barker appearing on Keeping Up with the Kardashians, or not the Keeping Up with the Kardashians, the new one that isn't called Keeping Up. Great
the
segue.
Kardashians.
The Kardashians. Travis Barker, Kravis.
Yeah.
Pushed in front of our faces once again, Blink 182, thanks to the biggest celebrities in the world.
Yeah, that was seamless, Cassie.
Wasn't it?
Absolutely seamless.
Rolled off the tongue.
Yeah. Yeah, so Kravis is back. I was actually a massive fan of Travis Barker's reality show.
I was waiting for where this was going.
Why? Have I said that before?
No, because I didn't think it was going to end in music.
Why?
Were you a big fan of Travis Barker's music?
I was a big fan. Yeah, okay. I went to see them at The Point.
Did you?
I went to see Blink 182.
Very good.
At The Point.
Did you enjoy it?
I loved it.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was also a fan of his reality show as part of the Blink 182 universe. Mm-hmm. And it was one of the first reality shows. Like, we had Newlyweds.
Yeah, it was one of the, it was the MTV era where we followed rock stars. We had Meet the Osbournes or Home with the Osbournes. Yeah.
It wasn't Meet the Osbournes or At Home with the Osbournes. What was it?
The Osbournes.
Okay.
We are Ireland's leading top pop culture podcast. The Osbournes crib. You know? We had those kind of shows.
The Osbournes. Yeah, so there was the Osbournes, there was Newlyweds, and there was Meet the Barkers, which was a little bit more obscure. So, you know, that's where I was hanging out.
Yeah, of course.
You MTV, know, a little bit off-grid.
Mm.
And what is so eerie to me is his relationship with his ex, Shayna Mokler, who I now DM with.
Stop the lights.
Yeah, regularly, because she's kind of, like, she, for me back then, she was A-list. Obviously, yeah, yeah. Now she's...
Couldn't even remember her name.
Yeah, she's kind of retreated back into the ether, but I have reached out to her and we talk. So his relationship with Shayna was eerily similar to his relationship with Courtney, in that they have all these obsessions with kind of pop culture references and Tim Burton and Jack and Sally. And he's literally copy pasted this onto his relationship with Courtney.
But in this kind of weirdly white, vast space that we know the Kardashians to kind of exist in, this is sort of ethereal, yeah, very clean, minimalist space. What I remember from Meet the Barkers was the, and of those shows early on, was you were seeing behind the doors and it was chaos.
Mm.
And there was like a lot of stuff, and there was that kind of gaudy wealth that we expected from of the time rock stars and the Osbournes, dark homes, loads of stuff, antiques and all that kind of thing. And now you're taking his same behavior and popping it into the Kardashians. It feels so weird.
It does. And he even, himself and Shayna both said that the reality show really contributed to, oh, she's looking at her watch. The reality show contributed to the breakdown of their marriage because it was really authentic. This was not a script. The cameras were really following them around in their day-to-day life. And you can get that by watching it. Now he's in, obviously, a show where everything is incredibly engineered. And although the Kardashians seem to be going for something a little bit more raw now, and even in last week.
Oh, they ate a burger. Yeah.
Oh, they eat a burger. But like Khloe broke the fourth wall last week and said to Kanye West on last week's episode, you know, this is a docuseries. You can look at the camera.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're really moving past the glossy.
Yeah. And it's working, like it's great.
I'm enjoying this series certainly more than I was the last. But like, as much as I think, oh, Courtney, it's like sometimes the way I love their PDA thing, and I love this PDA trend that's come back. It's like, you know, Angie and Billy Bob and those days of you know, red carpet mayhem. But I do like that. But for Courtney, I was a little bit like, God, it's like, have you ever had sex before? Are you even having sex? Because it's so...
Well, she's drinking his semen four times a week.
Sorry?
Yeah, so in the latest episode, and she's come under fire for this, she mentions that she has been consuming his semen because it apparently helps with fertility. And now fertility doctors all around the globe have to be like...
Please, everyone...
That's a fib.
Consume carefully.
Yeah.
It's a bit
goopy.
But
doesn't that seem like someone... Yeah, it is very goopy.
And I don't mean goopy as an adjective. Like
goopy as
although
in...
Although it is goopy.
Yeah. It seems like something he maybe might have made up. Tread carefully. But they got married there anyway. I'm glad she got married.
Mm.
I liked the look, the vibe. Very kind of Kardashians meets gothic.
Yeah.
Which was... It worked. It was pretty cool.
Well, what I love is this new, like... A new narrative for women later in life that are, you know, have gone through a breakup or a divorce, and they're now have this second chance, and they're no longer like the woman scorned. Like, so, you know, back when, say, Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston split up, it was very much like all eyes on Jennifer. She's so upset, bags under her eyes, never find anyone again. And the lad in heterosexual relationships and celebrities tends to do a quick rollover. Like, he was the one back in a relationship, like Ben and Jen. Ben came back with the nanny straight away. She was single for quite a while.
Yeah.
But now we've got like Megan Fox has come out of her marriage with Brian Austin Green, and Brian is visibly reeling and like trying to process it all on social media. And Megan's coming out with her new fella, like talking about how they're twin flames. You've got Courtney, who had an on-off tumultuous relationship with Scott Disick, who's now maybe found what she is putting forward as like the love of her life at the age of 43. Kim has divorced from Kanye, and she's got her new, her Time 100 Pete Davidson.
Yeah. No, it is great. It is definitely, it's a nice new narrative. It's time that it happened, I guess. And because it's even funny when you say that, you still think of Jennifer Aniston as the woman scorned.
All these years later. But every time I see her, that's how much the media did an umber on her.
Yeah.
I always feel a little bit sorry for her. Like, yeah. Oh, it didn't work out with Justin Theroux.
And it didn't work out with the awful, awful Brad Pitt, who, as we remember from that terrible, where was that profile published of him a few years ago? We covered it. He did one of those GQ, maybe long form profiles on Brad Pitt, talking about how sad and miserable he was. And it was desperate. Anyway, do you want to play a game?
Oh, right. Yes, please.
Okay. This game is called How Old Is? And this is going to test your nostalgic knowledge of the things from our youth.
So it's like a date game?
Kind of, but like just I want you to tell me in years.
Yeah, I'm not good at that.
But this is going to be the enjoyment of it for the podcast, for the listeners.
Okay,
let's not fight. You don't have to be good at it, okay. How many years ago was Avril Lavigne Complicated released?
I'd say 2001.
Okay, 20 years, yeah, 2002. Very good, well done. Kings of Leon, Sex and Fire. How many years ago was that released?
2012.
No, 14 years ago, 2008.
Oh, genie, Mac.
Isn't it? You start to feel old. I ruined this one for you earlier on, but when did Girls Aloud win Pop Stars The Rivals?
1996.
No, 2002. I told you.
Oh.
Yeah.
I have like a 96 in my head.
How old do you reckon Courtney Cox is?
54.
57. Well done. How old is Cher?
73.
76.
I am playing
a blinder.
A blinder.
An absolute blinder. Right. Without thinking. Okay, without thinking too quickly. Without thinking too quickly. This year's 6 years, who are 18, what year were they born?
2002.
2004. Isn't that shocking?
I've ruined your game.
You have by absolutely destroyed it.
Getting every question.
All right, hold on.
Instantly
in
right.
In decades, when was Grease 2 released? How many decades ago?
5. It was in the 70s, wasn't it?
Because you're just really bad at maths. It was in the 80s. It was four decades ago. Are this not making
really
you feel
bad at maths? I said 5 decades ago in the 70s.
Okay, sorry. Is this not making you feel really incredibly old?
It's making me feel smart.
Okay, well, it doesn't take much. Right? If Back to the Future was released today and they went back the same amount of years, what year would they be going back
obviously,
to?
Obviously, I don't know how many years they went back. I don't just know how many. Oh, they came to 2021.
No, they went back. They went. So in the first film, they were the first film.
Yes.
They went back in time.
I thought they went forward in time.
No, they go back to the future after they go back in time.
Yeah, I haven't seen Back to the Future.
Mortified for you. The correct answer is 1992.
The game flopped.
It really
did. But I really
did.
appreciate all the research that you've been doing.
My mind was blown by these things. I was like, 18-year-olds born in 2004.
Yeah.
I'm 60, like.
I know, that is shocking. That's crazy.
Do you know what's an interesting fact about that?
What?
Destiny's Child were not a thing within their lifetime.
Oh, wow. So they were split up by the time these kids were born.
So the time the children are of legal drinking age now grew up in a world without Destiny's Child, except for their weird resurgence album once in 2004 that flopped. They never grew up with Destiny's Child as a thing. They also lived in a time where Facebook always existed.
Wow, that's really
scary.
That's
the reaction I wanted.
No, that's well done for tacking that on at the end, because that is really scary.
Yeah.
That they've always existed with Facebook.
And never with Destiny's Child. What a weird upbringing.
Feel for them. Okay. Thanks, well, thank you, Cassie. And
thanks, Megan, for participating in the game.
Yeah.
Even if you didn't enjoy it.
I did enjoy it. I felt smart. I just don't know if it's going to be particularly entertaining. But thank you for preparing it today.
You're welcome.
All right. See you next day.
Bye. Next day.